Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Jeffrey Davis. I'm the host of the show, also CEO of Mage LLC, management consulting firm. And I'm here with Peter Morrison from Cohen, Rasnick, Morrison & Plowd, who's my co-host. If you're thinking pink, then you're thinking of Julie Tolick of Think Pink Law. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
What is a Think Pink Law?
A Think Pink Law is me, essentially. Think Pink Law is my law firm, where I practice family law, estate planning, and firearms compliance law here in Framingham and Metro West Boston.
Yeah, that goes with family law, doesn't it?
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, family law, firearms, and estate planning. So the joke is that I've got you covered from...
Explain how you evolved into this. So why don't you give us the story?
Sure. It's actually pretty interesting. So I am a solo practitioner. Think Pink Law is my own firm by myself. I am also a part-time associate at another firm called Skylark Law and Mediation here in Framingham, and I'm in their office. That's where I work out of. So for Skylark Law and Mediation, I do family law litigation and family law mediation, so mostly family law with them. I do take some random district court cases, too. At Think Pink Law, I do family law, a lot of firearms compliance, and a lot of estate planning, both with firearms and without firearms, regular estate planning. And it kind of fell into my lap. I had an interest in the shooting sports for several years, and the summer that I took the bar exam, I took more classes in shooting sports. And Justin Kelsey is the partner at Skylark Law and Mediation. His former partner, Matt Trask, was a firearms attorney. And when I met Justin and Matt, they said, hey, do you want to try doing some cases, some firearms-related cases with us? And I said, sure, that'd be kind of cool. And eventually, Matt Trask moved to work with Remington Arms in New York, and I inherited the firearms practice from them. So that became completely Think Pink Law. So it's second
amendment. She's toting around her neck.
I am.
She has
my little revolver necklace.
Revolver, right. I don't know if you had not noticed that.
Essentially, Second Amendment compliance. So whatever side of the argument you're on, my job is to make sure things are done according to statute. So I work with individuals who are either trying to get their license or appealing their license or doing their own background checks to figure out what they have going on before they try and get their license. I work with dealers to make sure they're complying with the federal statutes and the state statutes. I work with police departments to make sure that they're understanding what's going on if they're working on an investigation with a stolen firearm, not used in a criminal crime, in a criminal capacity, but if a firearm is missing from a dealer, for example, what the implications are, what, you know, if it's handed over to the state troopers to use for testing and evidence, how to get that back to the dealer. So I represent dealers and police on either side. I work with them to help the communication, facilitate the communication, explain the laws. So I'm on all sides wherever I'm needed, essentially.
You're just making sure that the laws are enforced properly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In Massachusetts, there are, I believe, 9 attorneys that are listed on Commonwealth Second Amendment's website. They're the nonprofit around here that does a lot of Second Amendment law. And there are 9 of us listed as attorneys on their website. There are other attorneys that do stuff like criminal law that say they know firearms law, and they may know it in a criminal capacity, but a lot of those attorneys end up calling people like me saying, oh, what happens now? And, you know, it's they think they
You're
know
the
it.
Attorney to the attorneys.
Yeah, there is a statute, a firearms statute, that most people are not aware of until it comes up, and that's when they have questions. The licensing requirements, so who can get a license, what the disqualifying factors are to make them ineligible. It's a general state statute, but it's also every town can have its own rules. There's a lot of inconsistency and there's a lot of confusion.
Because it goes back historically, doesn't it? A lot of these laws are old
laws. Yeah, they are really old. It's an interesting read. I was looking up actually recently the history.
It's worse than
firearms.
The alcohol laws, right?
It goes way back. And the fact that there's no consistency is what makes it the most difficult to practice, I guess, because everything's a gray area and there's never really a yes or no answer. It's completely case by case, and sometimes I don't really have an answer until a person becomes a test case. There's no law on a lot of things that hasn't been thought through. So it's, for me, as a problem solver and as a geek, it's super interesting to hear people's backgrounds and, like, you know, do their little background investigations and put the puzzle pieces together, and then looking forward to see if they can apply or they can't apply, or if, you know, something's going on in the laws and with the dealers. It's super interesting for me, which was why I love it so much. Now, I'm more technical. It hasn't had any impact. Nothing's really changed. You know, every month is different with, you know, if I get so many family law clients or so many firearms clients, it's the nature of a solo practice is it's always a little bit different. I've been doing a lot of estate planning lately with firearms because there are some estate planning laws and trust laws that are changing regarding firearms. that's probably a good point. So I've had, you know, an influx of people having questions about estate planning with firearms, but I think that's, so there's a specific type of trust called an NFA trust, which is the National Firearms Act related items that are super, super highly regulated, especially in Massachusetts. And it is, there are ways in which ownership can, and possession can depend on who is listed in a trust to have those items and how they're listed.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's super interesting.
So if you own a gun, you can't, you know, will it to somebody?
You can, but certain regulations, it has to meet the regulations. And so, for example, when I do estate planning with firearms, I make sure that those regulations are properly explained to the client and that are included.
So my father used to have old Civil War type rifles,
yeah,
First World War rifles in our basement when I was a kid, because I guess he just bought them
and saved them, yeah.
And then they sort of, I guess he could have said technically they became mine, they didn't, but I guess nowadays you have to register those too?
There are, depending on how old the firearms are, if they're antique, so to speak, there's a category called curio and relics for firearms.
Because I would assume there are a lot of homes that have...
Yeah, I have a lot of clients that have old collections that have been handed down. Some of them registered, some of them not. Some of them are inoperable. Some of them get rendered inoperable so they can keep them and don't have to worry about, you know, passing them on later in any kind of registration form.
So
it all just depends.
Artwork.
Yeah, they go on the wall usually for people.
Right.
But it just depends on the collection. It depends on, you know, the history and... it's a case-by-case basis, so it's not something that I can say yes or no to definitively, but there are a lot of...
Just because our time is limited.
Yeah, sorry.
And I love the Annie Oakley stories. They're great. But then you become an estate attorney as well, so tell us just a little bit about the rest of your practice.
Yeah, so I do estate planning, everything from basic wills to trusts. I haven't done anything super exciting in trusts. I think the guns and the trust are the most exciting component of trust that I've done, but it's really fun with people that have their several children to be able to manipulate the trust and the distributions and who the trustee is and what kind of plans people want for the future. So that's always kind of, it's the problem solving brain in me that enjoys kind of plotting those things out. And then I also do family law. I really enjoy family law mediation, so I try to do as much of that as possible. And I have a high-tech firm, so I do mediations via video as well, which is something that I'm trying to do more of to, if people can't make it into the office, if they're in different states or something, or even just for convenience, I've done video consults and video mediations, and I really like doing that and bridging the gap.
So interesting. Julie, if someone wants to find you at Think Pink Law, I think Peter's sitting here in a state of shock right now. How would they find you?
I think lot
fear.
Fear. Because of your guns?
Yeah.
My guns. I may or may not have any guns.
They don't get more liberal than the Meyersons.
I may or may not have any guns more than what's around.
The water pistols. How do we find Think Pink Law?
My website is thinkpinklaw.com. My email address is julie@thinkpinklaw.com. I'm on Twitter @thinkpinklaw, and my Facebook page is Think Pink Law. So if you Google Think Pink Law, you'll find me.
and we respect you for what you do, but Peter is from the, you know, grew up in another generation from his mother. It's make love, not war with Mr. Meyerson, right? Peter Meyerson.
Maybe there's a discussion to be had.
My name is Jeffrey Davis. That was Peter Meyerson talking to Annie Oakley, a.k.a. Julie Toldak of Think Pink Law. And we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after these messages on Radio Entrepreneurs.